welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 121st episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's episode is going to be our blonde moment. EJ and I are talking about Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn in their latest film, Snatch. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Marino.
I would like to prefer this as like my blonde ambition tour. You can have the blonde moment. This is my Madonna 90s. Let me be blonde and enjoy this time.
I enjoy. I didn't realize how much I was going to enjoy sitting in a theater full of middle-aged white women cackling about funny stuff.
It was really odd to see like the crowd for Snatched, because it was like middle-aged women and a lot of younger women as well. It was like the 21 to like 25 gal pal age, and then it was just like 45 up. I'm just here because Goldie Hawn's in this movie. The demographic's really good, but like you said, I was surprised that I sat and enjoyed it as much as I did as well.
In this episode, I think all our movie reviews going forward are going to be spoiler episodes. If you haven't seen Snatch or are worried about the big spoilers in it, that there really aren't that many big spoilers, but there are spoilers, come back to us on Monday after you've seen the film. And the best way to do that is subscribe to the podcast on Block Talk Radio or on iTunes, and definitely comment about whether you liked or disliked the film, and we'd love to talk with you as well.
This is definitely a film that I didn't think we were going to have a lot to talk about, even with people commenting, but there's some things to dive into, and we kind of have another bigger subject as well, just going beyond the film that we kind of started talking about, and I like this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the film, Snatch, which I think is a bad title. I would have given it something else, because it's hard to say.
It is, and like the original title was like Mom, Daughter, and I just was like that. It's straight to the point. Snatched, they're really trying to do the vagina pun there, and it's just like, I get it, they're kidnapped. And also, like, I got it. It just, it's kind of cringy.
Oh, I forgot the ED. That's why I'm having trouble with it.
Yes, this is not a vagina joke for sure. There is a snatched.
Snatched. Okay, that's so we're going to talk about Snatched. And then afterwards, we're talking about the legacy of Goldie Hawn, or like what Goldie Hawn was in the 70s and 80s, was this like iconic glitzy comedian, kind of like the Lucille Ball-ish of that time.
That's a perfect way of describing her, because there's tons of women out there, even during the Goldie Hawn era, that were funny. But something about Goldie Hawn being this like beautiful Hollywood starlet, that she's like classic beauty, but then is just so dumb and like overboard. She doesn't mind literally throwing herself off a boat. Like, I really appreciate that. So she's a distinct like legacy that she has like made.
And we were talking, what led into this conversation is, who is the next Goldie Hawn? Or is that, have we reached a time PC-wise where we're not doing that kind of stuff? I don't know. Is filmmaking changed? It's a lot of stuff. I mean, the conversation is infinite kind of thing, and that's why I wanted to talk about it.
No, absolutely. And you definitely, like, as soon as you said this, like, my mind was just going, like, who is there? Who's funny? And I don't want to say who's beautiful, but there, like we said, there is that level of Goldie Hawn, just classic beauty that you do that adds to the humor. And hell, I even think that kind of added into this film, that I like Goldie Hawn's, like, vibe she had in this. She felt like Goldie Hawn, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, let's just jump into the movie and talk about it.
You know, I think it's crazy. Goldie Hawn hasn't done a movie since 2002, I believe, maybe 2004. It was a movie with Susan Sarandon where they were like older groupies. And I was just like, okay, that was a cool concept. She's disappeared from Hollywood until this. And I think this is a decent comeback for her. Not the kick the door down comeback, but I think her and Amy Schumer definitely worked really well together.
I was worried about this, but I was definitely glad that Amy Schumer dragged Goldie Hawn out of the closet to get her back to working. Because one of the things that Amy Schumer does is she challenges the norms of what beauty is and what a female lead should be doing or saying. And that is one of the reasons why a Goldie Hawn gets shelved, you know, because in typical Hollywood, they're like, oh, you're old, you're past what we need. But like, I watched this film and I was like, I remember Goldie Hawn. I love Goldie Hawn. I sat there with a smile on my face because I was like, ah, oh, it's Goldie Hawn. And that's what she does. She puts a smile on your face. Doesn't matter if she's 18-year-old Goldie Hawn or 72-year-old Goldie Hawn.
I 100% agree. I think there's just something about her that's that star quality that I don't think you can ever lose. There's just moments where she's in the background and it's more focused on Amy Schumer. You just see her smile. And it was just such a motherly smile and just the bond. I'm like, this is why you're here, Amy. I mean, this is why you're here, because you are so good, like, Goldie. It's just the fact that she just brings something so small to this film. And you are right. I think the era of Amy Schumer kind of comedians have taken over. And a lot of people like that raunchier humor. And it works well, and it sells, especially to men and women. Everyone likes a fart joke. Even if it's coming from a man or woman, it works. I don't love them. But hey, it definitely does work, and I think that's why the Schumer kind of comedian has taken over. Where that Goldie Hawn era, it is hard, but look, I made a list. I tried to find the ones that we'll talk about a little later, but there are still women out there like that.
Oh, and the writer, Kate Dippold, she wrote Ghostbusters?
Yes.
And there was a fart joke in there.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I will say the first time I saw it, it worked. Like, hey, just get close to that record machine, we have a ghost, and it was a fart. I'm like, damn it, these are so juvenile, but it worked. It's one of the few jokes in Ghostbusters. But that's just kind of her humor. I think she also wrote The Heat, which was another movie with Melissa McCarthy. She works really well with Melissa McCarthy, and the Katie Dippold kind of like humor works. And it definitely worked with Amy Schumer.
And there was a fart joke in this one. Like, she literally just farts on Goldie Hawn as she passes out.
But once again, that felt like she's drunk, she's in bed. Like, I've had drunk sleepovers with people, and of course they're burping, farting, and I was just like, that felt real. It was, once again, I don't mind these jokes as long as they're properly motivated.
I wish there was a Golden Globe for best drunk acting, because I think Amy Schumer can portray a drunk person really well.
So naturally. Even when she's kind of poking fun of, like, basic drunk white girl, where she's like, oh my god, I'm gonna take a selfie, and I'm like, oh, I've hung out with this girl. Or even when she's just like, there's that moment where she was trying to like put the ice back into the like ice thing that she like knocked over.
The ice just, bucket?
Like, I could not think of the word bucket for some reason. It was like ice bucket challenge ruined that word for me. So yeah, she's just trying to put the ice in the ice bucket, and like just her telling them to shh was like so perfect, and I'm like, she gets it. She has had a lot of really drunk nights trying to sneak in.
And this, the way this film works is, you know, there's, you got the beginning of the film where Amy Schumer has all these big plans and then they get destroyed. And then she realizes that she wants to invite her mom to go on this trip to Colombia or Ecuador.
They start out in Ecuador and then somehow end up in Colombia.
Okay, so she has this grandiose plan of, like, going to Ecuador with a boyfriend. That doesn't work out. And she invites all her friends and everybody says no. So she finally invites her mom, who's a very clingy mom. And so they decide to go and then they get there. And so that's kind of the three parts of it to get it moving. But the first part of the film seemed a little rough. Was it bumpy?
I definitely would say bumpy. As soon as it started, I was just like, oh, here we go, comedy film. She just got fired. She lost her boyfriend. Those were like the scapegoats to use as like, oh, how are we going to start off a comedy movie? We're going to have them, you know, get jumped and get fired. So look at how bad their life is. So I was just like, oh boy, we're doing one of these movies. It's like a paint-by-number comedy. And then as soon as they basically got to Ecuador, the whole film changed. They had one cringy joke about whale cum that I was just like, oh boy. And then I was like, oh, from there I actually laughed out loud. And that's what I liked about this. This is pure out, like, laugh out loud comedy.
I did witness that moment where you were like rolling your eyes at the whale cum joke. I thought the intro was kind of funny, where she's talking about going on vacation and talking to this other girl, and it looked like they were buying clothes and ended up that Amy Schumer actually works there and the other girl wanted Amy Schumer to work. Like, I thought that was well written in the beginning, and then it kind of like, you just like you said, paint by numbers. It just kind of, okay, how do we get the plot to move from point A to point B to point C and go from there? And then once they get on vacation and the shit hits the fan is where I thought it like started rolling really well. And then there was like a middle point in time. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but the guy from like CSI or something like that.
Oh, Christopher Maloney from Law and Order.
Law and Order.
I will say I was like, oh God, he's going to be a bigger role in this. His role was absolutely hilarious as his fake Indiana Jones. I just found myself dying at everything he was saying. This has a good supporting cast. I don't want to say it's as strong as the Trainwreck supporting cast that had like LeBron and John
LeBron
Cena.
Isn't an actor.
But I will say LeBron killed me in Trainwreck. He had some of the funniest things. So I think they had a really good supporting cast for this one. I love Joan Cusack. I think Christopher Maloney did well. But definitely Christopher Maloney was that standout that I'm like, oh my God, I did not expect you to be this character. I thought you were going to be like the savior. And then you're like, wow, he's a horrible failure and dies so quickly.
I hated him when he came on. I was like, oh my God, this guy is the worst actor. It's so over the top. It's the worst. And I was like, oh, he's gone already. And like, I think in that little snippet, I was like, oh, that works. If it went any longer, it would have been horrible. But that's where there's some comedic timing with this film that just makes it work really well. And you brought up Joan Cusack, who I think would kick the shit out of LeBron James any day of the week with Wanda Sykes, teammate.
Well, I will say those are on par with each other. Like, I think what LeBron added in his quick scene and what Joan Cusack did, Joan Cusack doesn't even say a word in this movie. But that's why I was at first like, why did you hire Joan Cusack if she's not going to speak? That's half of what I love about Joan Cusack. And then I forgot how good she is at just a facial expression or body language. And then I'm like, that's why Joan Cusack's in this movie. And that's why she's still working, because she is consistently a hilarious actress.
And Wanda Sykes, I forget how much I love her. And I didn't realize how short she was, too. But putting her next – but it's probably Joan Cusack being that tall and what – that was just perfect casting for comedy right there.
Well, they look like when me and you stand next to each other and you're like, oh, EJ looks like a normal sized human. Oh, Matt looks normal sized. And then we put us together and you're like, wow, someone here is really off. And no, I think their dynamic on screen looked amazing. I love that.
And then your boy Ike.
You know, I don't even want to try to pronounce his last name because I've tried many times ever since Suicide Squad. I like him. I think he was hilarious. Not as scene stealing as like what I thought Christopher Maloney's small gig was or Joan Cusack, but I like him. I think he's funny. I think he kind of reminded me a lot of Little Rel Howard's character from Get Out, where he was just kind of like away from the main story, but being like, but for real, things need to get done. And like his humor really did work as well.
He had his own story that he had to evolve. You know, it was like this, it was a second tier story to the emotional adventure of Goldie Hawn and Amy Schumer.
And that's surprising that this film decided to go that extra mile. And I after the first little bit, I was just like, okay, comedies. I know we talk about Hollywood movies struggling with the third act a lot, but I think Hollywood comedy struggles with the first act. Like we said, I don't think they ever really know how to kick things off originally. Where by the time things get kicked off, you're like, oh, this is fine. This was good. This had like emotional arcs that were like layered in, like you said. I was just like, oh, did we need a secondary story about this guy getting over agoraphobia? I guess we did. And it was hilarious.
And that brings me back to Goldie Hawn, is that we talk about the emotional moments between Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. And then you remember how good of an actress she actually is. And you have Amy Schumer, who's doing the Amy Schumer, like, you know, whatever, selfie, I shit my pants, all this stuff. But then you have, like, Goldie Hawn being like, I'm freaking out right now. And you're like, yeah, you're an actor. You're an actor, and Amy Schumer is still just a comedian.
And I will say Amy Schumer didn't get eaten up as much as I thought she would have being next to Goldie Hawn. I was just like, when it first started, I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be Goldie, like, Hawn, like, just like eating up that scenery. But she was just like, no, you know what, I'm gonna be great. And Amy Schumer held her own. I don't, like you said, Goldie Hawn still outshines her in the acting category, but both were hilarious and just added a lot to this.
Well, Schumer was doing a lot of the physical comedy, like, then so that was, she was in your face most of the time throughout the film. I've never seen a tapeworm ever look like that. I want to know what was going on in the writer's room with that one, because I was like, that's not what I was, because I thought it was going to come out of the butt.
Yeah, I definitely thought they were going for an ass joke, and I was just like, oh, God, I don't want to see this. Kind of goes to the humor I don't love. But this was, it was fine. It was like the, out of the mouth, I was just like, okay, that's gross. Oh, it was so cartoony and so over the top, but it didn't distract him as much as I thought it was. I think every comedy movie, I saw Mike and Dave New Wedding Dates last year, and they had that whole massage scene where he's like hanging from the ceiling and like flipping on her. And I was like, okay, this is completely not realistic, but it works. And that same thing with this tapeworm scene that I was like, okay, I want to hate this, but I'm still laughing, so I don't know how to say. I also love that guy who was the doctor. He's in the show Broad City as, like, the sassy gay friend, and I was like, I love him. So glad to see him in this as well.
No, the supporting cast and everything, for the first, like, 2 seconds, I thought the villain in this film was Justin Long.
It looked like Justin Long playing, like, a Latino man in Colombia. I was really like, wow, Justin Long looks like shit in this movie. And then I'm like, oh, no, it's not. It's just that one guy who kind of does play like South American bad guy quite often.
And they don't have him listed on IMDb at all. Or the guy who worked for Homeland Security. They don't have him listed on IMDb at all either.
Well, because he was useless at his damn job at first. Maybe that's why he didn't get a listing.
But he was good. I loved him. Because it just epitomized everything with like, the kind of the government, like you're like, ah, and it kind of like also like puts a hole in all the theories of like action movies. Like, oh, Homeland Security is going to swoop in with Marines and save everybody. And I'm like, no, that's not actually what we do.
You find out there's like paperwork in between and you have to wait a couple of days.
What was your favorite part from the film?
I've been trying to figure that out. And I will say, I think it goes on just without the film. I think Amy Schumer's performance really blew me away. I'm used to Amy Schumer's kind of more her sketch comedy. And I think she does well in those like segments. But she was like you said, she did physical comedy. She doesn't really do the I'm going to throw myself out of the window comedy or anything like that. Usually she kind of is more of like, let me be funny and say a quick like little joke around the situation. I like that she did that. And I think this definitely is going to open the door for her to get more kind of comedy roles that aren't just Amy Schumer movies. I definitely see her now kind of opening up and doing so much more.
I thought the second death with a spear was timed perfectly because she just got done eating chicken wings.
The deaths in this movie actually altogether, I was kind of hoping the final death would have been when all the military is coming and Amy Schumer accidentally shoots the guy as he's like, oh no, I'm giving up. I thought she was just going to blow his brains out. And then I would have been like, damn, continuing that fun running gag. But no, I think those deaths are probably my favorite in the movie moment.
And where do you put Melissa McCarthy next to Amy Schumer? Like, because I think Melissa McCarthy is like at the best at this kind of comedy.
I will say I think she's the best, but I think she's also not always in the greatest movies, where the two Amy Schumer comedy movies I've really focused on and her show Inside Amy Schumer, I like Amy Schumer a little bit more right now. I love Melissa McCarthy, but after this movie, I'm more excited to see Amy Schumer in more comedies.
I know Amy's going to hate me for saying this, but I think she needs to just take a few more acting classes. Like, I don't know.
She's still acting like she's in her sketch show. And, you know, she doesn't do bad on that show, but I don't think it's translated like you. Yeah, I definitely think you're right. There's not a big screen appeal to her.
Because when you put her next to the different actors that were on the show, like even a Wanda Sykes and then Joan Cusack, who didn't say a word, which I thought was awesome. And then how they mixed in the action with Joan Cusack was almost flawless.
I could not, like, obviously I was like, okay, Joan Cusack is not doing this like double somersault like landing, but I'm like, that looked great. Like, yeah, their stunt work was surprisingly better in this movie than it should have been.
Because the green screen stuff was bad. There was definitely some green screen issues with this film, but I was really taken back. I was like, wow, that was the flawless parkour Joan Cusack hopping a fence. And I was just like, and the audience just ate it up. I really like the energy of our audience.
I think that's what really sold me on this film. I think if we had an only critic screening, even though the critics like kind of walked in groaning like, oh God, Amy Schumer comedy, here we go. But by the end of it, every one of them was laughing. And I think if we wouldn't have seen it with a crowd, I don't think we would have walked out like as positive. But seeing with who we did and seeing them eat up, I was sitting next to two girls who just loved every, like, oh, I love that song. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so funny. And I was just like, oh, okay, so this is definitely going to make money. Like, seeing the general public's reaction to it, I was like, oh.
I wanted to know who they worked for, because I the way I categorize media is how they're dressed, with like television people being dressed the best. And then newspaper, I'm trying to think of how it goes. Because I feel like radio is like the least dressed, least fashionable. But I feel like newspaper guys are a little bit more fashionable, or at least a little bit more professional. And then TV people are the most like glamorous and professional when it comes to their dress.
I definitely agree. That's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, did you guys just sneak into the press row? Because you guys are just dressed like average Valley Girl one.
I wonder if they were like NBC. What is it? Wait. FLA 8, like interns or like producer staff or something, some aspiring UT student.
You know, I as you're talking about people's fashion at press screenings, though, I dress purposely tacky all the time. So I'm glad I met you like as soon as I started going to screenings. So you weren't like, who the hell is this guy in a donut shirt and leather pants? I don't like him.
I don't judge people. Like,
but you judge people.
I judge, but I let you in. Like, I'll judge, but everybody can come in and we can all have a chat. But you know, because you can judge back. Because I was wearing like a crappy like softball T-shirt or something to my screen.
As I turn around and compliment, I'm like, oh wow, Matt, I like this outfit. And you're like, why? You're like, out of any day for you to be like, oh, EJ, thank you for the cute compliment, but not today. That was your reaction. Was just like, I did not prepare myself for that.
No, I was just, once you have a kid, it's whatever is clean. When they hit a little stage where it's like, hey, I'm going to put everything on you, like everything. And I was just like, so I stopped buying like nice clothes as soon as Alice was born. And she turned into Baby Groot. She says this one saying right now, and I have no clue what it is. And it's like, babba dabba dabba dab. But she just keeps repeating it. And I'm like, I really want to know what that means.
God, I wish we had a baby translator sometimes for those reasons. Just so you can be like, are you trying to deliver me like a message? What's going on here?
The bigger, larger conversation that we want to have today is Goldie Hawn was kind of this iconic character, iconic actress. She had some glitz. She had some glam. She had comedy like just pouring out of her. And she owned the 70s and 80s when it came to that stuff. And then she did Death Becomes Her as a redhead, right?
Yep, that was kind of her transition.
Nail
like,
in the coffin of her comedy career.
Which is so funny because I love Death Becomes Her. And I think that's like gained such a cult classic with the gay community as well. Like Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn out bitching each other. Like, that movie is awesome. But that definitely, for some reason, she dyed her hair and they were like, yeah, we're done with you.
But after that, has film evolved to where we're not doing that type of comedy anymore? Or has the list of female comedians just changed? Like, I'm trying to figure out why we haven't had, we had like a Lucille Ball, we had a Goldie Hawn. Like, who is that next person? And we're kind of just going through the list of actresses and of who that could be. And I think the closest person to that is Emma Stone right now.
Yeah, I think Emma Stone has, you know, going back from what she did with Easy A to Superbad, and then just seeing her, even as much as I don't love La La Land, she had some pretty funny moments in that. As much as her character is kind of a moron, I was just like, okay, she still's there. She always slays a red carpet, which is something Goldie Hawn was known for. Was like, oh, Goldie Hawn's at the Oscars. She looks great. And I think Emma Stone's at that level of like, wow, I can't wait to see what she wears. So she has the glitz side of it. She has the glam side of it. She also is really, really funny, and I don't think she tries. I think sometimes her comedy is just there. Also on my list, I put Anna Kendrick. I don't think she's as big as a name as Emma Stone, especially Emma Stone coming off an Oscar win. But Anna Kendrick's funny and has kind of only really done these kind of comedy-like roles, you know, even Up in the Air with George Clooney, was still more based on comedy.
I guess I'm trying to think of, like, in the 90s, like, you had Meg Ryan, but she was kind of the rom-com, but she was kind of standing up for herself kind of thing. The Bridget Jones Diary girl.
Renee Zellweger, Reese Witherspoon for a while.
And then, well, Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore was definitely that. Drew Barrymore's career was selective on her own end. She definitely picked and choose what she did, and obviously I think that's worked out well for her. I even think currently Elizabeth Banks. I think Elizabeth Banks is hilarious. I think she's stunning. I think she's a really powerful name in the industry. I think she definitely is someone that if she was just acting a tiny bit more, she definitely would have been like the number one female comedian of this time.
Oh, and the girl from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, she had the teenage detective agency.
I almost called her Veronica Mars, yeah. But I know her name is not Veronica Mars. Kristen Bell.
Like, I think she needs to, I don't know if she, I'm trying to think. Everybody I've put up to there, and I'm like, yeah, well, they're just not Goldie.
And maybe, you said this in the pre-show fist fight was Anna Faris, honestly, from Scary Movie, and then especially when she went blonde with her show Moms on TV. She's hilarious, like, and she does every kind of comedy. She'll do the situational comedy. She'll do the physical comedy. Anna Faris is definitely one of them. She never really transitioned to movies much after Scary Movie. Like, the hot chick is not what I want on my resume. But, you know, yeah, Anna Faris was good. Yeah, I you are right, though. No one's hit that Goldie Hawn level. Like, Emma Stone's the closest.
I definitely think Reese Witherspoon is that person. I think I would go with her.
Yeah, definitely Reese Witherspoon. I don't want to say she slowed down a little bit, but if you were looking at Reese Witherspoon between like 99 and maybe like 2008, she was like inescapable. Even that shitty movie she did with the two spies with Tom Hardy and Chris Pine, she was still that like Goldie Hawn type role. So yeah, Reese Witherspoon is definitely like number one choice then.
And that's the thing is you always go into that like the evolution of an acting career kind of thing is – you know, you want that Oscar, you're chasing that Oscar, that ambition or that indie project and stuff. So you make your money and then you sell out and then you go do your own thing here and there. But it's interesting to see how the comedy world has kind of changed because, you know, in the Goldie Hawn area, the Goldie Hawn era, she was more the damsel in distress and the klutzy kind of blonde that way. And we no longer... We still have that, but we're kind of moving away from it a little bit.
Well, yeah, they end up becoming kind of, I don't want to say a no name, but those are usually a smaller name. So the guy who's saving are the look at what the Knocked Up era where Katherine Heigl was kind of like the least important person in that like movie. But that was a vehicle for Seth Rogen. So this definitely was a little bit more male dominated, less damsel in distress, more. Look how annoying this girl is. Oh, God, it's so funny because the guy has to deal with it. That's the kind of comedy that took over.
Yes, the Judd Apatow humor.
The Judd Apatow. Same thing. I think Paul Feig is getting to that level, and he did produce, like, Snatched. So I don't want to say he's, like, at the end of it, but he sometimes has humor that I'm like, oh, you have your humor. But no, the Judd Apatow humor kind of ruined comedy for a couple years.
It's so bad.
It's so funny. As much as I loved Superbad when it first came out, now you look back on it and you're like, this was definitely that one fun time viewing and not a rewatch movie.
No, it's not.
Sorry, Superbad fans out there, but I don't think so. I think it's quotable with the McLovin and all that, but as a quality of film, I don't think it has that I can't wait to watch it again. And that's kind of the problem with a lot of comedies is I don't know. Even now with Snatched, I'm like, maybe other than showing my mom, because I think she would enjoy it as well, I don't really see me wanting to run out and watch this again.
I do like watching anything Rebel Wilson does.
Rebel Wilson was someone on my list, but nothing against her. She just doesn't have that glitz glam aspect of it. I think she's a cute girl, but she doesn't have that Hollywood glamour side. But she's someone that I'm like, oh, she's in this movie. Even when she was just at the MTV Movie and TV Awards, and she was playing Mrs. Potts in like a skit, and I was just like, yep, you're Rebel Wilson. I love you.
I'm just going through the list, and I love all the actresses. Like Jane Lynch, like she comes up on my. I'm just talking now about comedic actresses, and like I love of her. I'm just trying to see like who has the glitz and glam and the comedy and the acting chops. Because that's the thing is, it's comedy's hard. Like you can't just fall down and shit your pants and like be funny.
You could, and it works for some demographics, but no, I think now comedy has evolved in such a different way. And yeah, there's not a lot. And I even was trying to look for women of color. there's fewer like funny women, like black women, that are more of this like glitzy glamour side of it. There, even then, like Whoopi Goldberg was such an infamous name in like comedy and film, and we don't even really have that. Maybe Leslie Jones is starting to build herself up, but I don't think anyone's going to recover from last year's Ghostbusters. So that's gonna be okay to see if she can crawl her way out of that hole.
And it's tough for her because like, isn't she like 50?
Yeah, and that's the other problem is a lot of like black women end up starting later in their career, like Wanda Sykes. She's been around for a while, but she was already kind of older when she started. And there's some here or there. There's a younger black girl on SNL right now who's continuously like one of my favorites on sketches. She played the young black boy in the Stranger Things segment. I think she is hilarious. Like she's really good. And there needs to be more female comedians out there, and not just Kristen Wiig and Amy Schumer and Melissa McCarthy having to carry the industry on their back.
Well, I think that I'm just going through different lists, and I found this list of the top 50 funniest women of 2016, and it's by Mary Claire magazine.
Which is interesting from a women's perspective, but do I trust them for comedy? I don't know.
No, but what I'm going to say is I think a lot of them are on TV right now. Like Netflix and HBO, because Veep is a comedy right there, and Anna Chlumsky is on Veep, and she's up there. And I was like, oh, I remember her from My Girl, but I've never really watched her outside of that. And maybe
two of my favorite females right now are on TV with Broad City. Alana Glazer and Abby, I always forget her last name. Abby and Alana are hilarious on Broad City, produced by Amy Poehler, and definitely such a good relationship there. And they're starting to do movies here and there. I think one of them's coming up with a movie this year. I love those two girls, and I think that's funny. And it's so ironic you said it, but now I'm thinking a lot of the women are on TV and slaying TV. Even like Anna Faris went to TV. I think Sarah Michelle Gellar was funny for a couple years, and she had the show with Robin Williams before he passed. So yeah, it's definitely a TV aspect for women right now.
I'm trying to think.
Tracy Ellis Ross on Black-ish is one of the funniest women in the entire industry, but I don't think Tracy Ellis Ross gets that like that push that she should be, other than Black-ish being a hilarious show.
I like Eliza Schlesinger. She's the skinny version of Amy Schumer.
Yes, I've seen her a little bit. I don't really love her, but I want to see her in a movie because I think she could actually transition better than some have.
Oh, there's the... I like the girl from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I hate Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but I like Ellie Kemper. I think her humor's funny.
Ellie Kemper's cool. I remember her from The Office.
Right.
And I thought she was hilarious on that. And Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt it's an acquired taste, but I also think Jane Krakowski on that show is hilarious. Like, her stuff on 30 Rock, I still quote, like, evil plan. I just, like, she is just so hilarious that she was another one that I was like, why is Jane Krakowski not in more movies? Like, she would be the perfect role that she's played in 30 Rock and Unbreakable in movies.
It'll be, you know, we're talking about comedy and we're talking about female comedy. We have that Ocean's 8 film coming out this year, don't we?
Yeah, and that has a strong cast. Not, you know, things like Rihanna is not the first person I think of as funny comedy, but she's trying to find her way into Hollywood some way or another.
She was awesome in Battleship, man. That's an underrated film.
Wow, you were the only person. It's like me and you trying to talk good about Gods of Egypt last year. You're like, but Battleship, we should revisit that. You still won't give me Batman v Superman's a great film, but you're like, but Battleship.
Oh, okay. Number one.
Damn it, I shouldn't have done it.
Sorry. Have you watched Battleship?
Yes, I have.
Okay. The burrito scene in the beginning of the film is one of the best character development scenes ever. Getting tased beyond all belief, but making sure the girl gets the burrito is just epic drunkenness. You know a girl that we left out who might have it? Olivia Munn.
You know, she was someone I struggled with a lot too. Is same thing with the girl who was on The Daily Show, the black girl with braids. I think she's hilarious, but Olivia Munn is definitely there. She hasn't really done too much comedy. Like, last thing I can remember her is in X-Men Apocalypse.
The Christmas movie that we saw?
Oh, wow. We saw a movie. I reviewed it, and I completely forgot about Office Christmas Party. Yeah, she was hilarious in that. She's good, but I don't think she is definitely the level of, like, the Emma Stone or even the Anna Kendrick that we've named.
Well, she's in the Predator movie. We'll see how that goes.
I wonder if she's going to be what Danny McBride is in Alien Covenant, if she's going to be kind of the funnier one, or is she now trying to move to a female action star? Because that's another topic we can get into, is the declining amount of female action stars.
The declining amount of female action stars?
I think we're like, we were doing really good for a while, and then now we're just kind of like slimming down just a tiny bit again.
Because I also feel like we're declining in the action hero phase.
Well, yeah, the male action hero is done. It's like Tom Hardy can only cover his face and be a hero so many times. But it's like, how many action movies can Charlize do by herself? Like, that or Scarlett Johansson? It's just like, do we need a white girl to be in an action movie? Well, we have those two.
And we never brought up Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock, I don't want to say she's from a different era of this, but her heyday is kind of done. But she still is the definition of what that Goldie Hawn was. With from Miss Congeniality to even recently, The Heat was pretty funny. I think her Miss Congeniality days were the best.
Ah.
Because I do love Speed, and I love earlier, like, what was it, The Net she was on?
She was in The Net?
Yes.
Did you see Love Potion number 9?
Yes, I did. She's also in a witch movie, Practical Magic.
Ah.
things that I'm like, wow, I can't believe I actually remember this many like random 90 movies.
This actress doesn't have the glitz factor yet, but I do love her acting chops, and that's Sarah Paulson.
She is hilarious. She's serious. She's one of the best ones, and I will always thank Ryan Murphy for giving her the shot on American Horror Story, because no one was really giving Sarah Paulson jobs. She was on like Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, but you know, which was a good comedy, and a lot of underrated people went on to do things from there. But I want to see Sarah Paulson in movies, because hilarious, like great woman there, and you know, her and her 85-year-old girlfriend.
And you know how the acting career kind of goes, you sell out, you do indie film, and then you kind of like, that's where your base of your work, of your legacy is after you sell out. But I feel like this one person has done all the grit and the grime their whole entire life of indie and tough roles, where I think now is the time for her to break out as a comedic actress, and that is Dakota Fanning.
I you could have named anybody else, but Dakota was not the first person I thought of. And you know what? I definitely think that. I agree. Yeah, she does. She's done a lot. And even seeing her younger roles, what she did with Brittany Murphy, R.I.P. Brittany Murphy, miss you. You were awesome. She was another hilarious actress that was going to do really well. But no, Dakota, that's a good pick, that she should definitely have been moving to the comedy side of it. But I do think Elle Fanning is starting to take over.
Yeah, the Fanning Wars are going to be awesome. I can't wait. It's just going to be good times.
I can't wait till they do like the Mary-Kate and Ashley, we're going to hate each other movie, where they're like starring opposite each other. That'd be fun.
I don't know. It wasn't number 9, but it was the Chris Evans X-Men movie where Dakota Fanning was in it. And she's like a 12-year-old. She gets wasted in it. And like, she has this drunken rant that's amazing in it. I think the movie's called Push.
Push. I was going to say Jumper, but that was the other one that was kind of just like Push at that same time.
But she does have the comedic chops in there. And like, because she's an actress, she has been acting her whole entire life. And I'm basically was just going through the Ocean 8's cast. And I was like, who is it? I was like, Katie Holmes.
Nah. Well, speaking of the Dakota Fanning age, I think Abigail Breslin, who was in Little Miss Sunshine, and she was just on Scream Queens, and she'll be in the Dirty Dancing remake on TV. She's awesome, and I think she's a good – she doesn't have that glitz glam side to her, but she's definitely someone that I would keep an eye out for, because, God, she still owned Little Miss Sunshine as one of the funniest child performances I've ever seen.
Anne Hathaway, she funny?
Oh, I guess Larry said we can start liking Anne Hathaway again because of that one article. So I was about to cringe and be like, oh, Anne Hathaway, but she's so awesome. Oh, we all love her again. Nah, I can deal without Anne Hathaway for a while.
I think the Mindy project, she needs to get up there.
She needed to do a movie quicker than she did, like right when the Mindy project was coming out and was really hot. Same thing with the girl who did The New Girl, Zooey Deschanel. Those two should have moved to film sooner instead of just getting kind of stuck on season 8 of both their TV shows.
Yeah, I really like Zooey. I think she's good.
Better than her sister that is only going to be Bones, and that's all she'll ever be.
Well, Bones is done.
I know. Now I'm like, well, what are you going to do? You'll still just be Bones.
Just be Bones. Oh, man. I think, I don't know about Zoe. I like Zoe. But again, it's all those paths you take, you know? I mean, like.
And I think 51st Dates hurt her with that, where she kind of played, I don't want to say the damsel in distress, but she got stuck in that, like, big eyed, like, cute girl phase for a while. And that was the thing that, instead of damsel in distress, we got a lot of those, like, oh, I really like this awkward, chubby guy kind of movies, or the, oh, you're not conventionally hot, I'll fall in love with you. That kind of replaced the damsel in distress.
Wait,
and
you said 51st Dates.
Oh, sorry. 500 Days of Summer.
Okay. Because
something like that.
I always
51st Dates is the Drew Barrymore one.
Right. Because I always forget about it, but she's an Elf and she's amazing in Elf.
I honestly have never seen Elf.
Well,
I know. I don't like Will Ferrell. I like Anchorman. If he only lived as Ron Burgundy or the times he plays George Bush. But I've never seen Elf.
That's because you're more of a James Caan type person, and Will Ferrell will cheer you up during the holiday season and get you off the naughty list and put you on the nice list.
Yes, I would much rather watch Nightmare Before Christmas on a constant loop.
Okay, you have to watch Elf.
I will watch it one day the million times it's on TV. Same thing, other confession. I know this isn't the Christmas episode. I've never seen A Christmas Story.
We talked about that already. You're missing out on, like, epic movie cinematic culture by not seeing that film.
I know. I'm missing out on that, but that's on my list one day. Maybe this Christmas you'll force buy it for me for Christmas and I'll watch it.
No, you just go watch it. It's like it's probably free on Netflix.
You're like, there's a 24-hour loop on TBS. I'm not buying you that.
Like, what are you talking about? Hi, so tonight we're going to see Aliens.
I'm hyped. Like, I'm one of the few people who loved Prometheus. I think Prometheus was an awesome film. Damien Lindelof doesn't need to write any scripts ever. I'm tired of him writing scripts, so at least he's not in Alien Covenant. So I think everything I liked in Alien or in Prometheus is going to be in Alien Covenant.
I'm hoping that they don't dumb it. I'm hoping that Ridley Scott doesn't dumb it down that much and revert straight back to a horror film, because I still want an epic universe to be built. And that's what I thought I was going to get with Prometheus. And I still was fine with it. Cause I mean, like, I watch Blade Runner and I'm like, I kind of get it. I kind of see why people are super excited, but I'm not blown away by it. The same thing with Prometheus. I was like, I kind of get it. I like it. There's still some mythos going on and we're evolving and there's this crazy universe. And I love when people try to explain the unexplainable to me. And that's what Prometheus was.
Yeah, it's definitely a talky sci-fi film, and a lot of people like more action-based sci-fi. And I definitely think Alien Covenant seems like it's going to have that, like, kind of grandiose sci-fi concept with the, from what I've heard, it's very gory. So I think it's going to mix. I think it's, I told you last night, from what I've heard, everyone is going to grab something from Alien Covenant and like it. I don't think it's going to be the genre-defining moment that Alien or even Aliens was, but I definitely think this is going to be a good film for the year.
I mean, it's no Fast and Furious franchise where you're on the eighth film. I mean, it can't redefine the genre in the eighth film.
Hey, for some reason, though, Fast and the Furious is still doing well at the box office. It made $1 billion outside of the U.S. alone. Like, that is crazy. So, I know, no, I think everyone else wants to look at the Fast and Furious and is like, how are we doing it? How can Ridley Scott be like, but I'm making good movies. My movies are cinematic.
Yeah, what smoke and mirror bullshit are you guys doing over there?
But hey, it's working, and I don't think Ridley's ever been one to be like, I really want to be the James Cameron top grossing film. I think he just wants to make his movies, and I think that's what Alien Covenant was, and that's why he canceled Neil Blomkamp's other Alien movies. He's like, no, I'm good. This is my franchise. Don't touch it. This is my baby.
I'm really upset that they didn't let him make a film, because I love his sets and his visualization, and he's got some talent there. And
Chappie ruined it for him. As much as I don't hate Chappie, Chappie really, really hurt Neil Blomkamp's, like, Hollywood appeal. He did okay with Elysium. Just everyone loved District 9, and then Chappie, everyone was just like, Oh, this is what you have to offer us?
I know. And
I don't hate Chappie. Dyer, Antwoord as actors? No. Don't need those two as actors. Weird choice there. But, you know, I definitely think Ridley Scott has it. I told you last night this isn't going to be the horror film of the year. Get Out still has it. It will be the horror film of the year later on. But Alien is going to be the horror film of the summer, I think.
And Logan's still the best comic book movie of the year so far.
Yeah, so far nothing has touched it. As Guardians was cute, but Logan is still. But Logan, see that Logan is a. It's an like I said, a Get Out. Those are in a whole different field of like they surpass their genre, and they're just good. Where I think even now going to Alien Covenant, it's just going to be good for the genre, but not help or hurt the genre.
Hi, hi, EJ. I'll see you later on tonight.
I can't wait.
Hey, Matt. We survived another episode. Oh no.
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Sardo. My co-host EJ is also on Twitter at EJ Christ with a K. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a chance, we would greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 121st episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host, EJ Marino.
Yeah, I'm glad you took out the putting up with you fact, because we're not even putting up with each other anymore. We're bonding again. We're in a good, happy Zen spot. We just don't need any more Star Wars celebration moments.
One Star Wars celebration moment a year is good to just rile the feathers. You gotta rile the feathers.
Rile them, but like I still have like PTSD every time I hear Skype call now. I'm like, oh god, I'm getting yelled at by Matt.
Jeff Shea is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkey Spider Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.